listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair, Part A. Here's the continuation of A House Divided by Anna Peel. During season 13, which filmed from late 2020 to early 2021, McSweeney was freshly sober, but she struggled with the isolation of COVID, and her grandmother, who had been a key figure of support, was in hospice. The cast was about to take a trip to Singer's house in the Hamptons, and McSweeney texted Ward and his fellow showrunner, John Paparazzo, "My grandmother is going to die any day now," adding that if the funeral happens while we're in the Hamptons, there's no way I can miss it. Sorry. Paparazzo responded, "Obviously, hang in there, thinking of you." Soon after the trip began, McSweeney learned her grandmother was losing consciousness. She began having panic attacks. A source involved with production says Ward told her, "Whatever day or time you need to be with your grandmother, we're going to make that happen. Don't get stressed out about that. We're on your side, and we're going to support you, okay?" But McSweeney felt his tone meant the opposite. A car was later arranged for McSweeney when she requested to leave the Hamptons a few hours early. Her grandmother had already died. Some fans questioned why McSweeney hadn't gone to her grandmother earlier, a thread Cohen encouraged on WWHL. After being asked by Cohen about McSweeney and the trip, former Roney housewife Heather Thompson said, "I think it was better for Leah to go home. It hurt so bad that I was not able to grieve," McSweeney says, "that I had people not showing me any kind of compassion or humanity regarding it." At the same time, McSweeney was trying to maintain a good relationship with producers and convince herself that what had happened in the Hamptons was okay. She texted Ward and Paparazzo, "I'm glad I stayed in Long Island, 'cause that's what my grandma wanted." McSweeney says reading the message now is like seeing someone with Stockholm syndrome. While the season was airing, McSweeney says Shannon told her, "I just think that there was such a stark difference between you when you were drinking versus this season, and that's why the audience kind of didn't like you." A source says McSweeney complained about the audience hating her, but her drinking was not at the center of these conversations. The source also notes that viewers found McSweeney's struggles to be relatable. Nevertheless, McSweeney informed Shannon of her decision to leave the show by phone in late 2021. Weeks later, McSweeney says she suffered a major depressive episode related to the show and her grandmother's death. Her mother and a former long-term partner, the father of McSweeney's teenage daughter, moved into her home, then moved McSweeney to Silver Hill Hospital. She stayed for 8 days, the longest amount of time insurance would cover. By March 2022, after many hours with a therapist, rabbi, acupuncturist, and healer, McSweeney felt she was in a better place. Bravo and Shed were casting a season of Ultimate Girls Trip to be filmed in Thailand in July of that year. McSweeney says producers swore it would be different this time, fun, and that she was offered $250,000 for 1 week of work. Cohen and an NBC Universal executive told her she was being considered for Roni Legacy, a Roni franchise with veteran New York City housewives that might air alongside a rebooted Roni series with a new cast. According to McSweeney, Cohen also said, "Let's get you through Ultimate Girls Trip first." McSweeney said yes. McSweeney got a text from fellow UGT cast member Marisol Patton before filming began. "I support your sobriety, obviously, and I could never do what you do because I don't have your willpower, and I marvel at what you have done, Patton wrote. And then, but on that note, I wish you were still drinking, that's all. Yes, I sent the text message, Patton told Vanity Fair. There was a collective memory of the girl running around throwing tiki torches and skinny dipping, and that is who I was hoping to go on vacation with. Though McSweeney was vocally sober, cast member Heather Gay asked McSweeney if she was drinking and said, let's get Leah drunk. Another cast member, Giselle Bryant, said to McSweeney, like, if you drank this week, would that be a big deal? It would ruin my life, McSweeney said. McSweeney texted Ward, did you guys push her, Bryant, to talk about this stuff with me? It's so odd. Ward wrote back, no, we did not. McSweeney texted, I don't need people trying to undermine my sobriety. Ward responded, get out of your head. During lunch at an elephant sanctuary, the cast played a game, one McSweeney says the producers came up with, in which they listed the best and worst parts of being housewives. McSweeney talked about feeling like she couldn't leave the Hamptons and the depression and inpatient treatment that followed. According to McSweeney, Ward and Paparazzo, the showrunners, came into her room and Ward said, Lisa Shannon's pissed at you, then you're going to get it today. A source familiar with production's thinking says Shannon was not unhappy, just confused by McSweeney's belated upset, as producers had told her she did not need to go on the Hamptons trip at all. The cast began piling on McSweeney, according to people with knowledge, repeatedly telling her on camera that she didn't want to be in Thailand. In confessionals that aired, cast members discussed whether production would ever have pressured them to stay on a trip and not be with a dying grandparent. According to someone with knowledge, there was at least one dissenter, Gay, who said, they wouldn't even have to say a word. I would be afraid to leave and go to my grandmother's funeral. I would not do it. That footage wasn't included in the show. Several days before UGT wrapped, McSweeney had a panic attack, which was aired. According to McSweeney, a staff medic gave McSweeney a makeshift IV clipped to a clothes hanger on the bed frame, which then fell and pulled the needle out of her wrist. When McSweeney's condition didn't improve, the crew took McSweeney to the hospital, where she was admitted overnight. Two members of production were nearby, and McSweeney started crying to the nurses. Just keep them away from me, she said. In November, McSweeney found out from DeLesseps and another castmate, Dorinda Medley, that Legacy would be filming without her. On March 10, 2023, McSweeney and her attorneys at Edelman Matz filed an employment discrimination complaint with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission against Bravo, Shed Media, and its parent company, Warner Brothers Discovery, and Cohen, Shannon, Paparazzo, and Ward, citing a violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act. On May 15th, Christy Del Rey Cohn, an attorney representing all respondents, denied the claims. The response stated that McSweeney's disabilities were allowed for and that she was not retaliated against. In fact, the response says, production spent endless amounts of time accommodating her and only internally expressed frustration with the fact that she was knowingly misrepresenting what had transpired. The attorney also pointed out that complainant herself spent much of Roni season 12, the season of her relapse, discussing, and sometimes even mocking, the alleged disabilities that are now the subject of the instant complaints, and stated, complainant's need for affirmation was never-ending, but that need was completely separate from any alleged disability. The response notes several instances of support, but McSweeney maintains those were either subsequently reneged on or she felt weren't offered in good faith. On March 23rd, UGT premiered. On episodes of Watch What Happens Live that aired during the run of the show, Cohen questioned Guest about whether McSweeney was fun on the trip. One night this spring, Leah was the drinking game word. Whenever anybody mentioned McSweeney, Cohen instructed viewers to take a drink. problem drinking isn't the only problem. That was immediately clear to Williams, a lawyer and TV host, who in 2021 became the first black cast member on Roni. Many other cities had featured black housewives, though cast at that point were largely segregated by race. Beverly Hills, New York, Dallas, New Jersey, and Orange County were mostly white. Atlanta and Potomac, mostly black. A virtual education session before filming season 13 covered topics including black women, how black women are treated in larger society and the black community, microaggressions, what are they, how do you recognize them, lexicon. Appropriate versus harmful offensive language and missteps, what to do when you say something offensive. How do you move forward in that relationship? Williams, McSweeney, Morgan, Singer, and Alessops were on the call, as well as an NBC Universal communications executive, a Bravo publicist, and two representatives from a racial justice organization. Williams had never previously met Morgan or Singer. Before the one-hour session officially began, according to McSweeney and Williams, Morgan commented on the natural hair of the black woman leading the season. Williams, 40, interpreted the meeting as a cover-your-ass move. She says it mostly focused on the kinds of things cast members should avoid saying, like the racist trope that black fathers are not present for their children. "What if they don't have a father? Why can't I say that?" Singer said during the meeting, according to Williams. Most of them don't. The Roni publicist, who is also black, told Singer that she has a father, but Singer said she'd read a study that confirmed that most black children do not. McSweeney corroborates Williams' account. The training included open dialogue, Singer said to Vanity Fair. In that spirit, I ask a question about a statistic I had read about single-parent households, where children with single-parent households were statistically less likely to succeed than two-parent households. Later, while filming a scene that did air, DeLessops and Singer expressed on camera their squeamishness around words such as dick, which they attributed to their backgrounds as church-going and conservative. Williams said that she had no discomfort with sexual language, noting she was the most educated person at the table, with a B.A. and a J.D. DeLessops, who is a high school graduate and licensed nurse, said, "I don't like the way you talk." When Singer also got upset, Williams said, "Your white fragility is killing me right now," then had to explain the term. DeLessops called Williams an angry woman, which Williams understood implicitly an angry black woman. "I never referred to your color," DeLessops said. Williams left. Singer stayed behind. The scene that viewers saw ended there, but the emotional momentum continued. One of the people who remained told Vanity Fair, Ramona slammed her hands on the table. She goes, "This is why we didn't need black people on the show. This is going to ruin our show." Singer emailed Vanity Fair, "This absolutely did not happen. In fact, I supported adding diverse cast members well before Ebony was added." The hot sheet went out several days later to a group that included Cohen and other NBCU executives. It did not note, however, that Singer allegedly said the show didn't need black people. On October 24, 2020, Cohen responded via email, "These are incredible reads and will be amazing episodes. The fact that this particular journey through white fragility ends with Ramona DMing Bryan Cranston is next level." That season, Singer also allegedly told a black woman staffer, "There's so many of you guys here now, please don't change your hair, as I'm not going to be able to remember anybody's names." Singer says this was the kind of thing she commonly did. It was strictly a commentary on my inability to remember names. As an example, just last week, I saw a photo with me and Travis Kelce from 2016 on Watch What Happens Live, and I thought he was Jax Taylor, she emailed Vanity Fair, referring to a Vanderpump Rules cast member. According to two people familiar with production, Singer exclaimed, "There's so many black chicks." Singer denies saying this, though footage that aired in the season shows her using the phrase black chicks. Darren Edmondson, Harrington before she married, was a senior producer on season 13, her first Bravo production. "No one ever said officially why I was hired, but Ebony was the first black talent that was brought on for New York," Edmondson told Vanity Fair. "I think that they were specifically looking for a black female producer." A source involved with production says new producers are typically introduced to the cast, but that didn't happen with the new black hires on Roni. "If the cast is not being told from the executives, these people are here to do this X job," that person said, "the cast is going to make up their minds who they talk to and who they don't talk to." Edmondson says she wasn't able to produce Morgan, DeLesseps, or Singer. They simply didn't respond to her text or calls. So it seemed unusual when Singer spoke to her after a scene filmed on November 6, 2020, in Singer's home. Here's how the hot sheet described the conversation. Ramona says she doesn't want to talk about race, religion, or creed. Ramona tries to change the subject again, asking about who Ebony is dating. She asks Ebony if the guy is black, white, or what. Ebony says she thought Ramona didn't want to talk about color. Ramona says, "Now I have to watch what I'm saying to you. I feel like whatever I say is wrong." A person who sees hot sheets said that while they don't recall that one specifically, they would not dispute it. After this scene, Williams left. Edmondson remained, she says, at Ward and Paparazzo's instruction. A source familiar with production denies Paparazzo asked her to stay. Singer told Edmondson that her interaction with Williams reminded her of when Jewish colleagues used a Catholic slur with her when she was a young woman and called her a shiksa, a Yiddish term for a non-Jewish woman. Edmondson hadn't heard the word before and later had to ask her mother what it was. According to Edmondson, she said, "Ramona, I have no idea what you're talking about," to which Singer said, "Oh, it's literally like somebody calling you the N-word." Singer says she never said the N-word and that this account is a misrepresentation. "I did describe an incident where I was called a shiksa while working in college," she wrote, "but I did not compare the two experiences." Edmondson wrapped up the conversation without addressing what Singer had just said and says Singer thanked her, but she discussed the moment with a shocked colleague and sent her husband and a friend text about what happened, which Vanity Fair has reviewed. Then Edmondson started crying. "I should have said something," she says she told herself. "Ebony's fighting this fight this season." She says she talked to Ward and Paparazzo about it that night. They said, "I'm so sorry that happened to you." According to multiple people who worked on season 13, other production members went to Warner Brothers Discovery HR about Singer's comments throughout the season. Edmondson endeavored to make herself feel better. "At least she's getting comfortable around me," was how she rationalized Singer's ease using the N-word. "I always felt like Darian and I had a great relationship," Singer told Vanity Fair. But on a different day of filming with Williams, Edmondson recalls, "Literally, we broke down hysterically and cried in each other's arms. And I've never in my life, in a decade of working in TV, ever shown emotion like that with a cast member." Williams had tried to quit the show November 6th, the same day Singer allegedly used the N-word, though Williams didn't know about the incident at the time. On November 9th, Williams says that Ward, Paparazzo, and Shannon implored her to stay over a video call. Williams says they told her, "Listen, what you're giving us is exactly what we want. If we wanted a different black woman, we know how to get them." Shannon suggested Williams bear the racial animus she was experiencing more lightly, as Williams recalls it, reminding her, "Ebony, this show is a comedy." Producers deny that Williams tried to quit and that they ask her to stay, though someone with knowledge says a producer said Ebony and others generally that Real Housewives is partly comedic in nature, viewers tend to see the show as an escape. Emails reviewed by Vanity Fair show Paparazzo, Ward, and Shannon had a Zoom call with Williams on November 9th. At the last dinner of the season at Singer's Hamptons home, a party planner hired by production set the table with raw cotton. According to some, it was supposed to look like snow. Once again, Williams had to provide context. Shedd acknowledges the situation and said they addressed it immediately. But it wasn't until after the season began airing in 2021, almost a year later, that Williams heard Singer had been reported to Warner Brothers HR, and that it had been determined that Singer said she had difficulty telling black crew members apart. At that point, Williams requested a series of meetings with NBC Universal. During one meeting with NBCU executives and an outside lawyer, Williams says she was told an investigation into whether Singer had said the show didn't need black people was inconclusive. Williams says someone on the call confirmed the company determined Singer had said the N-word, but Williams says the lawyer, who was not representing NBCU, tried to downplay the issue. To paraphrase, Singer didn't call Edmondson the N-word, she just said the N-word. Williams says that NBCU's chief diversity officer, who is biracial, was present. He told the lawyer, "No, what we're not going to do is sit here and litigate the capacity in which the N-word was used in the presence of a black woman." NBCU did not comment. Williams says that was the only time I felt like anybody on the other side of this had any competency. What I recognized, even in the midst of my own trauma, is I still had the most power of any black person involved in this thing, Williams says. These are just young black women trying to go to effing work. Edmondson has not been hired for a Bravo series since her one and only Roni season, which ended filming in 2021. For the first time in Housewives history, the reunion, which typically films about a month before the finale airs, was canceled. At the time, Bravo attributed this to scheduling challenges. Now, a source with knowledge says the reunion was put on hold during an investigation into Singer's conduct, and ultimately never happened. Roni went off the air for almost 2 years. When it came back, it had a new cast and a legacy Ultimate Girls Trip, starring Singer, DeLesseps, and Morgan, helmed by Paparazzo, which filmed in St. Bart's in June 2023. Shedd produced both, as well as the Ultimate Girls Trip season that Singer filmed 3 months after Roni season 13 wrapped. Someone familiar with production says, as soon as Shedd became aware of concerns related to conduct on the Roni season 13 production, producers immediately reached out to the affected employees to make sure they were supported. And Shedd hired an outside investigator to conduct a thorough and confidential investigation. Where issues were substantiated, appropriate corrective action was taken. These measures were taken over 2 years before the casting of UGT St. Bart's Legacy. Sources differ on when the allegations of Singer's use of the N-word were communicated between the companies, which illustrates how complicated the processes and reporting chains can become on these shows. Why do they stay? It is a promotional machine unlike anything you can even buy, says Williams, who tried to develop her own show with Bravo after season 13. Money and clout, says McSweeney. One housewife wonders who she would be otherwise. Is it any wonder why we cling to it well past its expiration date? Frankel is one of the few examples of a Bravo star whose success transcends the network, and even she hasn't cleaved herself completely. Frankel quit the show, sold the cocktail division of her company, Skinny Girl, for a reported $100 million while filming a Bravo spinoff, returned, then quit again, then developed several more shows with Bravo. In 2022, she started a podcast about the Real Housewives called Rewives, distributed by iHeart Podcast. Frankel says that former Roni castmate and former best friend Jill Zarin's July 2023 appearance on her podcast is what prompted her to reevaluate her relationship with Bravo and reality TV generally. The truth about what came up on that podcast is, like everything in this story, complicated, and has been the subject of housewife infighting and proxy wars in Page Six, on WWHL, and among fans. Disclosure, I am one. On Just Be, Frankel's other podcast, Zarin revealed that she didn't know Frankel would be filmed attending the January 2018 funeral for Zarin's husband, Bobby. She wouldn't have looked like that had she known, she said. Hand to God, should Bobby turn in his grave? Frankel says she believed Zarin was aware. A source with production knowledge tells Vanity Fair that a spokesperson for Zarin indeed had reached out and invited filming at the funeral. Zarin supposedly also invited a crew to Shiva, but they declined. Zarin told Vanity Fair that her former publicist suggested asking if Shed wanted to film the funeral. Bobby had loved being a house husband while Zarin was a cast member from 2008 to 2011. Zarin agreed. It's an honor for Bobby to be honored on national television and be respected, she says. The emails went back and forth, including with a suggestion for a made-for-TV Shiva, but Zarin said her ultimate understanding was that there would not be cameras present outside the service. Zarin says she's not upset that production came afterward. What she calls an effing ambush was that she wasn't prepared or paid for what would become a huge, heavily promoted Bravo moment. Her long-awaited televised reconciliation with Frankel, her estranged best friend. Zarin says she wouldn't have asked to be compensated if they had documented Bobby's memorial because she considered that a tribute to him. Otherwise, she says she would have said, write me a check for $100,000 and put it into the memorial fund. She also wasn't happy when Cohen later indicated Zarin was lying about knowing it would be filmed. Yet even after all of this, Zarin still wanted to be on Bravo. In 2021, she starred on UGT Season 2, which was produced by Shed, the production company Zarin says crashed Bobby's funeral. I want to vomit at how I kissed Andy's ass to come back, Zarin says now. She says she was in talks to join the legacy cast, but the negotiation ended because Bravo was offering less money than Zarin felt she deserved. On July 21st, Frankel posted a now-infamous TikTok in which she grapples with assailing a grieving widow for TV and calls for a reality reckoning. It got a lot of pickup, Frankel says now. It seemed fairly obvious to me. Then I said, how am I going to go further with this? I can't just talk and not do something. In addition to her stated goal of securing future rights for cast and crew with input from SAG-AFTRA, Frankel says she's planning to meet with network and streaming executives about improving conditions on reality productions. The housewife quandary sounds a bit like problem gambling, and the house always wins, which Bravo reminds cast members. People are going to like you because we edited you well, so don't worry, McSweeney says Cohen told her before her first season premiered. We literally are walking to the casino thinking we're going to change our family's lives, make a fortune, and ride off into the sunset, one housewife says. But if you were, say, the most successful housewife ever, you would not be able to chart it without charting also absolute emotional destruction, public humiliation, divorce, death, crime, prison, shame, misogyny, and just an onslaught of pure hate. Bravo and its partners who make these shows are employers at the end of the day. Based on documents shared with Vanity Fair, A contract might state that cast members will be paid only for the episodes in which they appear, which may be fewer than the number they film. However, their obligations, including promotion and filming, continue for the duration of the contract. Outside unscripted work and press opportunities may be subject to approval requirements. There are non-disclosure agreements as well as non-disparagement agreements, which Frankel has railed against. Confidentiality clauses are standard practice in reality programming to prevent disclosure of storylines prior to air, the network wrote in a statement to Variety. Any current or former cast or crew is free to discuss and disclose any allegedly unlawful acts in the workplace, such as harassment or discrimination, or any other conduct they have reason to believe is inappropriate. And then there's a waiver of privacy clause. Two Warner Brothers contracts with Bravo Talent, viewed by Vanity Fair, state the appearance, actions, sounds, and statements of artists and others, and the information related or revealed thereby, may be of a personal, private, surprising, defamatory, disparaging, embarrassing, offensive, or an otherwise unfavorable or injurious nature, and may be factual or fictional, and may expose artists to public ridicule, humiliation, or condemnation, and may portray artists in a false light. When Frankel first read her contract, she decided, I can navigate this. I'm just a different breed. She also says, I was a prostitute at the highest rate possible and was aware that there was a transaction that was happening and that I was going to benefit from it. Bravo has made adjustments based on information that leaked from troubled productions. The next UGT to air will be Shannon and Paparazzo's Legacy Edition. It switched slots with what was supposed to be the fourth season, which filmed in Morocco months before Legacy. In January 2023, People published a story about cast member Brandi Glanville allegedly kissing co-star Caroline Manzo multiple times throughout the evening without her consent during filming. The following month, Page Six reported that on the same night, Glanville allegedly pinned Caroline against the wall and put her hands on Caroline's breast area and vaginal area. During a March interview, Manzo, who has not publicly made any accusations, said, I can't say much, only because it's not good for my headspace. I would imagine it would unfold on the series when it airs, and there will be a lot said then. Through her attorney, Derek Smith, she declined to comment to Vanity Fair. The same month, Glanville's attorney sent Warner Brothers a letter that read, The entire incident was comprised of some flirtatious conduct and kissing between Ms. Manzo and Ms. Glanville, and all of it was absolutely mutual and consensual, and called for it to release all footage. Glanville says she and Manzo were never alone, and no one from production stepped in at any point. Glanville had behaved similarly on a previous season of UGT. Glanville says NBCU executives sent positive feedback to the cast. Cast member Phaedra Parks told Vanity Fair she was sober that evening and observed Glanville and Manzo's interaction as nothing short of a modern-day Harlequin romance. Love was winning. You're not in your right mind, and you want to give them good TV, says Glanville. The whole point of these shows is to get us unhinged. If there was an issue or situation where someone was uncomfortable in Morocco, no one in production or the crew or cast intervened in the moment. Glanville says she heard nothing until she started posting about Bravo and UGT on social media while she was hospitalized for inflammation in October, at which point she got a text from Barry Goldstein, whom she had never heard of, telling her he was a psychologist who wanted to call her for a check-in. Bravo recently announced the season will premiere in 2024, though a source with knowledge of executives' decisions says the network is still discussing whether it will air at all. On October 20th, Manzo's lawyer filed suit on behalf of Marco Vega against NBCU, Bravo, Peacock, Warner Brothers, Shed, and Forest Productions, a subsidiary of Shed. Vega, who was an on-screen butler on a UGT arc, alleges Glanville sexually harassed Vega and that Parks smacked his bottom. Defendants allowed, condoned, and even encouraged Ms. Glanville's sexually aggressive and offensive conduct on others on the sets, the suit says. Warner Brothers does not comment on pending litigation. Other reality shows at other networks have had to make corrections. The Bachelor reportedly instituted a 2-drink-an-hour restriction. After 2 intoxicated Bachelor in Paradise cast members reportedly had an on-camera sexual encounter. On the British dating show Love Island, past cast members have said they're allowed 2 units of alcohol a day, and rigorous mental health protocols were put in place following the suicides of 2 former cast members and the show's longtime host, which I wrote about for this magazine. On Netflix's Love is Blind, a dating series with single-season cast, a cast member accused producers of not supporting her with mental health care. Although emails viewed by Vanity Fair show she was offered post-show therapy. This month, a cast member filed a lawsuit asserting she was sexually assaulted while under 24-hour surveillance, and no producers intervened. Chris Cullen, the creator of Love is Blind and CEO of Kinetic Content, told People that cast are not filmed or managed around the clock, and that we can't be accountable if someone doesn't tell us that they have a concern. On Kinetic shows like Love is Blind, The Ultimatum, and Married at First Sight, professionals interview each cast member prior to filming to evaluate whether they're in a headspace to be on and subsequently off reality television. Similar protocols are in place on Love Island, The Bachelor, and MTV's The Challenge. Frankel says she underwent emotional and psychological testing during casting for The Apprentice, which aired on NBC. A source with knowledge of the casting process clarified that while psych evaluations take place for competition series like Top Chef and Project Runway, unstructured, unscripted series like The Real Housewives only require partners to have already cast talent speak with a psychologist in a meeting NBCU calls Intro to Psych. McSweeney, Williams, and Frankel say they did not talk to a mental health professional before filming a Bravo show, though a source with knowledge says McSweeney and Williams completed Intro to Psych. 2 other housewives told me they had Intro to Psych phone sessions with Goldstein, but in their view that the calls did not achieve the stated goal of establishing rapport with the show's psych early on. The general murkiness about the level and type of care provided extends to the language of the guidelines. A representative for Shed says that going forward, cast members will have even more touch points with show psychologist. Bunim Murray Productions, President Julie Pitsey, oversees The Challenge, one of the few long-running reality shows outside Bravo with a repertory cast. Bunim Murray is the production company that brought us The Real World and Road Rules via MTV. The Challenge has evolved its approach through multiple instances of racism and a 2009 accusation of sexual assault. Pitsey says mental health professionals who have worked with the same contestants over many years are on call 24 hours a day during filming, and counseling is available once production wraps. If producers see cast members order what they deem to be too much alcohol, they get cut off. On April 2, 2023, Vanderpump Rules star Rachel Levis entered inpatient mental health treatment for 3 months, following a season on which her affair with a castmate known as Scandoval became the show's central plotline and a national news story. Despite Bravo's knowledge of Levis's residential care, Cohen subsequently declined to correct Levis's castmates on multiple episodes of WWHL, when they said she was actually at a spa and implied she was faking her mental health issues. Cohen also repeatedly asked what guests thought about LaVis and her mental health. Saturday Night Live star Chloe Fineman called her a filthy whore, and Cohen laughed. After the reunion, he speculated in a Variety interview that LaVis had been very medicated at the taping, during which her co-star, Ariana Madix, whose ex-boyfriend LaVis had the relationship with, told LaVis, "F yourself with an effing cheese grater." Cohen did not intervene. "You can't be the leader of the universe, then act like you don't know what's going on in it," Frankel says of Cohen. "I was part of it," Frankel says. "I wanted to be Andy's favorite. I loved that I was Andy's favorite. I loved that I was able to make good television and produce it at the same time. I loved that producers knew I was the best. I was in the machine. I was the machine. I created the machine." Of her new mission to remake the medium that made her, Frankel says, "It's my penance." Presented with the idea that she might participate in Frankel's organizing, Williams said, "F Bethany Frankel. You think I'm going to let some white girl speak for me with my experience with a multi-billion-dollar corporation?" On September 22, 2023, after Vanity Fair began discussing this story with representatives from Warner Brothers Discovery and NBC Universal, NBCU Entertainment Chairman Francis Berwick sent a message to production partners. The message included a new alcohol policy. "Building on our current protocols, we will require that you deliver an expanded alcohol-related training to the cast, crew, and production team." Berwick also wrote about enhanced mental health support, including an on-set psychological support during and after filming and at reunions, as well as care after filming. According to the memo, there will reportedly be an on-set HR representative for shows where NBCU determines additional support may be warranted, and a Bravo representative told Vanity Fair there will also be a daily communication to NBCU, separate and apart from general production notes, flagging any health, safety, or respect issues that have arisen to quickly address concerns. 4 days before Berwick's memo went out, Bravo had aired an episode of The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, on which Gay drank espresso martinis until she vomited, urinated. It was unclear what fluid was pouring out of Gay and onto the floor of the Sprinter van. Cohen was there to quiz her about it on the episode of Watch What Happens Live that aired September 26th. Then he handed her an espresso martini to sip as punishment if she declined to answer any questions during a drinking game. One day later, on September 27th, the surprise guest on WWHL was Ramona Singer. Cohen pulled her onto his lap, embracing her. On October 23rd, Cohen teased that Singer was going to appear on WWHL again. She sat in the front row of the audience, and the drinking game word of the night was Ramona. Her name was uttered 8 times. As this story went to press, Singer was still scheduled to appear on a panel at BravoCon on November 5th. "I want to burn it down," one housewife told me March a year ago. "I don't," I said. "I still hope there's a way to keep making Bravo shows without cast members feeling they've ruined their lives. Can't humanity be made into entertainment humanely?" I put this to another housewife, the one who dreamed of being famous. "I take umbrage with humanely," she says. "Have you ever seen what it takes to train a Navy SEAL or to become a professional athlete? There's nothing humane about the process to do it. And there's nothing humane about the game of football. And I effing love it." The Frenchie Revolution. Money, murder, fur. Welcome to the War Over America's Most Popular Dog by Mary Pilon. Illustrations by Christopher Buzzelli. Opening illustration shows Frenchies of various colors. Nowadays, Charla Lenarth debates whether she should wear a wire to compete at Frenchie Bulldog shows. Lenarth, 56, tours the nation in search of top ribbons for Jezebel, one of her several French bulldogs. And ever since Woofstock, a 60s-themed competition celebrating 4 days of peace, music, and dogs, she has been concerned about Jezebel's safety and her own. When she and Jezebel turned up in Vallejo, California for the June 2022 show, the rumor mill had been percolating for weeks with allegations that both mystified and angered Lenarth. Only 7 months into campaigning Jezebel, as dog enthusiasts call showing, she was a relative newcomer to the elite dog show scene. Sitting indoors at the Solano County Fairgrounds amid tie-dye, beads, spectators wielding peace signs, and 1,969 dogs, these three women came over and stood over me, she recalled recently. She set down Jezebel, who'd been resting peacefully in her lap, and rose to speak to them. Two of the women were dressed to show their dogs. One was there to watch. I didn't like that feeling, Lenarth said. One woman said I was an abomination. Another used the F-word and said, you don't deserve to be here. One woman said, I will haunt you until you quit. Lenarth's crime, in the eyes of these competitors, was owning a colored Frenchie. And yes, the language may sound disturbing. More on that in a bit. You've probably seen the breed puttering along the street, or in the flowing stream of flat faces on Instagram or TikTok. Known as a clown in the cloak of a philosopher, Frenchies are beloved for their wrinkly faces, alert ears, and city-friendly size. They've become arm candy for celebrities including Reese Witherspoon, Martha Stewart, Megan Thee Stallion, and Michael Phelps. Lady Gaga's Frenchies made international headlines when their walker was shot and two dogs were stolen in February 2021. First recognized as a breed by the American Kennel Club in 1898, French Bulldogs are the it dog of our moment. This year, according to the group, they surpassed Labrador Retrievers, who held the title for 31 years. Among the most popular Frenchies, though, are the blue ones, which are less blue than light gray, as opposed to those with fur that looks like butterscotch, midnight black, or a marbled meld. More mouse than smurf. Beloved, though they may be, and they make up a large swath of the breed, blue French bulldogs are banned from competing at shows backed by the nonprofit AKC, which promotes and sanctions the annual Westminster Kennel Club dog show. Insiders call them DQ dogs, shorthand for their disqualified status. And so the ongoing color war among the upper crust of the French bulldog world has turned into an extraordinary human battlefield. Blue French bulldog fans may even be condemned by mere association. The Woofstock incident, in fact, had nothing to do with Jezebel, but with another of Lenarth's pups, which stayed home that day. When Lenarth got her first French bulldog, she bought it as a pet. She said that she had zero interest in showing dogs, nor was she aware of any type of hue of dog being scorned. Like millions of other dog owners, she saw the pup, fell in love, and soon they were together. Lenarth is far from the only Frenchie owner to encounter hostility. It is common to online forums as well as to the thousands of in-person competitions that take place throughout the year and across the country. Though incidents like Gaga's might be rare, the world is rife with controversy, harassment, and sometimes outright violence, according to more than 24 handlers, breeders, and owners. Those who feel the need to emphasize tradition feel differently, as dog shows continue to be a gathering spot for impassioned hobbyists seeking to maintain the breed that they love. We're preservation breeders, meaning we breed to a standard, Patty Sosa, the public relations chairperson and head of judges education for the French Bulldog Club of America said. That's the basis of the backbone of our club. The increase of Frenchie funds and attention has all added fuel to what had been a long dormant debate among a small specialized community, now with millions of dollars and lives, human and canine, on the line. A Frenchie can cost anywhere from $2,000 to more than $20,000, depending on lineage, color, health, and competitive history, which is often discerned by titles won at AKC competitions. Pink fluffy Frenchies, a whitish long-haired variation that gives off a gremlin kind of vibe, the scourge of the American dog show scene, have reportedly sold for six figures. The overall demand, questions about breeding practices, and large price tags have spawned the term greeder. On one side of the battle are the preservationists, who adhere to the official AKC-accepted French bulldog colors, or color combinations. Brindle, a twisty swirl of light and dark colors, brindle and white, cream, fawn, lighter tan, sometimes with a darker mug, fawn and white, fawn brindle, white, white and brindle, fawn brindle and white and fawn. Those colors of dogs, and only those, can be shown at the myriad French Bulldog shows backed by the AKC and the French Bulldog Club of America. The FBDCA determines the breed standard used to judge at Westminster, the actual puppy bowl of dog shows. Some preservationists argue that those who merely own and aren't actively campaigning unofficial colors of Frenchies are guilty of sullying their beloved breed, like Lenarth. The nonprofit FBDCA's website features a no-fad colors logo with a blue dog struck through with a red line. You can take your standard as a blueprint, and you try and stay as true to that blueprint as you can, Sosa said. It's not just the physical, it's the health. We require eyes to be certified so there are no eye problems. We want dogs to have a long, healthy life. This article will be continued in the next installment. This program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selection by Mark Hoffman.